My name is Jessica Strauss-Fuchs, and I am Chief Operating Officer of Poppy Flowers and formerly the host of this podcast, The First Close. I am redefining venture capital by finding ways to unlock the closed and opaque doors of the institutional venture capital landscape. Welcome to The First Close, Carta's podcast about the people who are building next-generation venture capital firms. We interview new voices in venture about their ambitions and challenges as they aim to redefine the industry. At Carta, we help VCs build enduring venture franchises, starting with Fund One. To learn more about how Carta expands access to equity and transforms capital markets, visit us at carta.com. That's C-A-R-T-A.com.
Welcome to The First Close. Today is a bit of a special episode. If you're a listener of the show, our guest needs no introduction. Jessica Strauss-Fuchs has been this show's host over the past three seasons. So why is she the guest? Well, Jessica's leaving Carta to become the Chief Operating Officer at Poppy Flowers. As part of her send-off, I sat down to chat with her to learn more about her experience in VC, her time at Carta, and what she's most excited about in her next chapter. A little about Jessica's background. Jessica is Poppy Flowers' Chief Operating Officer and previously served as Director of Emerging Funds Strategy at Carta. She has spent the past decade working in VC. She's been a venture partner at Dundee Venture Capital, entrepreneur in residence at GE Venture, and the VP of Development at the National Venture Capital Association. Jessica is a Kauffman Fellow and earned her MBA in Design Strategy from California College of the Arts. As we do on every show, let's get into Jessica's slash line, the key stats that make up her unique track record. Jessica has been in the investment world for 9 years, has built four things, made two investments, and sits on four boards, two of which are of nonprofits. Jessica has written 20 blog posts that she shares with over her 1,300 Twitter followers. One last thing, she's been one hell of a colleague. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you, Saif. So happy to be here.
It's very odd to host the host, but here we are.
Here we are.
Would love to start with you today and give people a little bit of an overview about how you ended up in venture capital.
Let's start at the very beginning. So at a high level, I've always thought of my career as ideally something that was happening at the intersection of creativity and capitalism. I think I was in college when I came up with that phrase, like, oh, I want to work at the intersection of creativity and capitalism. So in college, for me, that meant the art market. And that was really my first exposure to private markets. I found what was happening in terms of pricing and volumes of trades at Sotheby's and Christie's. Those were pretty much the big players at that time, which was 2006. And to pay for my interest in the art market, which paid nothing and I believe still probably does, I actually got an internship with a private equity firm, basically doing scheduling for this partner who was investing in growth stage tech companies. And so I was having these parallel experiences of working at an art gallery and working at this private equity firm. And the partner asked me to make a profile on a website called LinkedIn to check it out because she was doing some diligence. So yeah, that's how I joined LinkedIn. And I started doing some research and thinking deeply about the role of technology. So from those two experiences, the art market and private equity, I thought, where do these things converge? And it took me several years to find the answer. Ultimately, where art, creativity, and capitalism converge, to me, is venture capital. But it took me, as I said, many years to get there. I actually, my first job was working as a congressional staffer. So I was interning in New York. I left that world, and I moved to Washington, D.C. after college. And I remember looking at the Capitol building and seeing this huge, inscrutable place and really wanting to make a difference and thinking I couldn't quite find out how to make a difference in the art market, how to make a difference in that finance tech world. So I became a congressional staffer for 4 years and started at the bottom answering phones in the House, ended up moving over to a Senate committee. And then my last post in Congress was I was speechwriter to the former House Majority Leader, Eric Cantor. And it was when I worked for Leader Cantor that I really got exposure to this creativity and capitalism idea, because we worked on a policy called the Jobs Act from soup to nuts. And the Jobs Act was passed in 2012. I would say that's been one of the foundational policies that has opened up access to capital for emerging growth companies, i.e. startups. And that really got my wheels turning about, okay, how do I get involved in this ecosystem? This feels like where creativity is happening. So I left Congress after 4 years, moved to New York, and joined a Series B SaaS company as the 30th employee. And I would say that that was really my first step into the venture world.
What does the transition from public to private sector feel like to you?
Oh my gosh, it felt like moving to another planet. There were many great things about working in Congress as a staffer. One, you learned that it truly is possible for anyone to make change. I mean, I saw firsthand how individuals came to the Capitol and actually enacted legislation and built coalitions. Two, you're working in a super high stakes, super high output environment. And everything needs to be perfect. Everything needs to be, you know, you're basically public facing all of the time. And it's a very formal environment, very hierarchical. There's a lot of process. You know, our democracy basically runs on process. And there was certainly room to innovate and have individual thinking. But when I got to the startup, I was like literally in a different planet. I was the 30th employee. There was no formality. There was no structure. The company is still around today. They were building the first iterations of their product. And I think I really enjoyed just how inventive it was and how every day it was a new hypothesis around growth. That was very different from policy, which is very long-term. One piece of legislation could take many decades, maybe at the shortest, like a year or two, to gather momentum and actually go through the entire process of ideation to becoming law. So I think they're just two totally different horizons for what returns or outputs look like. So yeah, it couldn't have been more different. But I would say the thing that stuck with me from Congress was the ability to perform at a very high level, kind of no matter what the environment is.
So when you started off in Congress and then an operator role, where did VC get introduced to you? We talk about VC quite a bit as this thing that we're super normal. We're all used to it because we've been talking about it for a while. But I'm curious to hear from you, like, when was it that you were like, oh, this VC thing? Like, I understand the Jobs Act, et cetera, but like the VC thing, when was it that you were like, this is what I need to do next?
As I said, I think I was searching for venture capital when I was in college, but I didn't, at that time, I didn't have the exposure to what that was. So the first time I was exposed to VCs was certainly during that Jobs Act period. We would work with them on the bill, but I don't think understanding the actual day-to-day of what a VC is and why that might matter to me was when I was working at this company, this SaaS company, is 2013. And suddenly a part of my job was helping to build our board reports every month. And I started to think, who are these for? Like, who are these people asking all of these detailed questions? And of course, I then met our board and came to know the different firms that they each represented. And I had a sliver of an understanding of what venture capital was, a sliver that was enough to spark my curiosity and made me think, what would it be like if I sat on their side of the table? So long story short, I decided to go that path. The way that I got there actually was 9 months into having left my job in Congress and joining this startup, I got a call. It was an August afternoon from the CFO of the company called me. I was actually on vacation. I was on a train in Denver. That's another story. But I was on a train and she called and said, we've made some strategic decisions and I'm sorry, we're going to have to let you go. And I was, I think, 26 at the time. I had just taken this big risk. I think at that point, my parents thought she's really gone off the rails with her career, you know, leaving this congressional job, working at a startup. And I experienced the real risk of that. And so I collected myself, spent a couple of months consulting with different people and thought, you know what, I really do want to learn about the venture capital side of things. And I have a ton of policy experience. And a job opened up at the National Venture Capital Association, which is an incredible organization that was founded in the 70s that represents the venture capital industry in the US on public policy, industry initiatives, research. And in 2014, I started working at the NVCA and spent almost 4 years there. And I learned pretty much everything that you could about venture capital, the structures of funds, how institutional capital flows down into the venture asset class, who all the different kinds of firms were, you know, the large established firms, the emerging funds, which has become a huge passion of mine, the policies that matter to venture capital investors and their portfolio companies. And I think one of the most important things I learned and worked on while at the NVCA was how homogenous the venture capital industry has been, how difficult it is for women, people of color, any minority to really break into venture capital. And in 2014, it feels like that topic is very commonplace today. In 2014, it was not commonplace. And so we did a lot of work around that. But long way of answering your question, that was my first exposure to VC. It was really being on the operator side and saying, who are these people asking these tough questions?
Being in VC or VC in general is very wide and expansive, and there's different ways to enter into the space. How have you aligned your values and the things you care about with the work that you've done in the VC ecosystem?
Interestingly, venture capital, I think, is a type of career that actually really depends on the people who choose this career path to have a strong point of view and a strong sense of their own values in order to be successful. Because when you're in venture capital, you're basically making your best decisions based on how you see the world. So whether you're investing in a sector or a stage or type of company, like you need to have a really strong point of view. And I think the point of view that I came into venture capital with was one, a policy point of view. We do have the opportunity to make broad scale change. And so I was really curious in my early years in venture capital, like what are the changes that we might make in this industry to make it better? And I would say my early learnings in the first 4 years that I was certainly at the NVCA and just learning this industry was, like I said, wow, there's no diversity in venture. B, how does capital flow from the institutional limited partner, the pension fund, the endowment into the venture fund? How are those decisions made? It's very opaque. So I would say diversity, the opacity of the industry, and then who's benefiting and what are the effects of those benefits? So when venture funds see returns, who's winning? Is it the entrepreneur? Is it the LP? Like how are incentives aligned? And so I would say every job I've had in VC, I've tried to answer those questions and make some kind of meaningful improvement in access and understanding and improving diversity and inclusion in the industry. So we did a lot of work at the NVCA. We launched the Diversity Task Force in 2015. I think what was really exciting about that is at a time when that the topic around the lack of diversity and inclusion in venture was gaining ground, we were part of driving the ground that it gained. And ultimately, we basically built a pledge from the venture industry, and we got a ton of VCs from all different kinds of firms to sign on. And ultimately, that was recognized by President Obama. I'll never forget going to the White House. It was the White House Startup Demo Day, and President Obama recognized this pledge from VCs that the NVCA had organized to do all of these different studies and actions related to diversity. So from there, it's an interesting entry point into VC, but my first job at a VC firm was I was recruited by GE Ventures after my time at the NVCA to come be an entrepreneur in residence. And part of my mandate there, and this is thanks to the CEO of GE Ventures, Sue Siegel, who is an amazing woman, told me that my mandate was help us do better on diversity and inclusion across the firm. And this is a firm that actually was quite diverse by any standard. So I think that being able to, like I said, having a perspective in venture is so important to being able to make decisions. And for me, a North Star has always been, how do we expand access and expand the inclusion in the industry?
That's a easy segue for me to ask the next question. Is Kauffman Fellows, GE, MBCA, Dundee, and then Carta? Not in that order, but...
pretty much, yeah.
Carta was the last stop before Poppy. Why did you choose coming to Carta as the next step?
Yeah, so Kauffman Fellows, I'll start there because it ends with Carta. Kauffman Fellows is a fellowship that is specifically designed for venture capital investors to grow both as people and as investors. And I got into the fellowship in 2017, really with an eye toward becoming a better investor, improving my network, improving my knowledge. And the reason why I wanted to do that was because I wanted to make change at an even greater scale than I had at NBCA. And I had really honed in on a problem area that has continued to be a theme in this show, which is how inscrutable the process of raising a fund can be, particularly when you are a new fund in the market. And so I spent a bunch of time while I was a Kauffman Fellow actively in my fellowship interviewing institutional investors of all kinds, endowments, pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, to understand how do you decide which venture fund to allocate to. I even had an internship at a university endowment and got to see some of the process from the inside. And my conclusion with all of that was, one, institutional investors of all kinds are stewards of capital, often permanent capital vehicles, and they have model portfolio that they have built, and they have an investment policy that helps them drive the kinds of returns they need to sustain their institution, their university, et cetera. The more I understood about the institutional model, the more I empathized with the kinds of decisions that they are known to make, which in venture capital, they're often branded with, they invest in name brand funds, and it's very hard for new funds to invest. That may be true, but I thought there also needs to be a better way because so many new funds are in the market. This is where the most diverse managers are. And institutions, because of the what I would call outdated evaluation processes they have, are missing out. And therefore, they're missing out on the alpha that is the role that venture capital is intended to play in their portfolio, meaning this is the riskiest aspect of their portfolio. And they're investing in that to do its job. But if you're investing in same old fund X that has a brand name, you're really missing out on the frontier of venture capital. So I thought, how do you change behaviors? Software and technology are a way you change behaviors, because when you, whatever the technology is, essentially it's probably creating an efficiency and creating more value for that user. And I thought we need more technologies that are focused on institutional investors to help change behaviors, to help improve their returns. And there are very few companies in the market that I think are doing this really well, and Carta rose to the top. So thanks to Kauffman Fellows and the relationship Carta has had with Kauffman in sponsoring Kauffman Fellows, I met Ryan Snow, who's on the amazing person on the sales team at Carta, and he shared with me what we were building in the investor services group, and I got really excited about it. And I met, this was 2018, I met Vrushali Panikkar, who is the head of product for investor services, as you know, Safe. And it was really conversations with Vrushali over what ended up being several years where I became interested in this possibility of changing behaviors, opening access to venture through technology. And that's how I got to Carta.
When you got to Carta, you started the First Close podcast. Why did you think the First Close podcast was something that you needed to own and drive?
When I got to Carta, and I have to credit Jane Alexander, Carta's CMO, who shares a passion and interest that we all have at Carta, which is how do we support emerging funds? And we wanted to, and we are still working on, building out products and services that support emerging fund managers. So when I came to Carta, we stepped back and we said, what are some of the pain points that first-time venture fund managers have? And how might we solve them? So when we stepped back and we looked at that bigger picture, there are a couple pain points that first-time fund managers experience. The list could go on, but I'll just name a few of the salient ones. One is it's really hard to find out how to actually do the thing you want to do. Like, how do you form the fund? What are the first steps I take if I want to actually create a venture capital fund? So one, there's a lot of opacity around kind of the tactical elements of doing it. Two, it's really hard to build yourself up as a new brand in venture capital. So branding and marketing has not often been one of the core strengths of venture capitalists broadly. And it's particularly challenging to build yourself up as a brand when there's kind of a few notable names that own the space. So you have this huge challenge with branding. And then three, it's can be very difficult to establish, and this is connected to brand, but establish your reputation as an investor. And so we said, okay, it's really hard to figure out how to form a fund. It's really hard to establish a brand. And three, it's really hard to communicate and establish your reputation as an investor and your track record. What could we do that would enable first-time fund managers to communicate themselves, and how could Carta play a very special role in that? And so the podcast really became the vehicle by which we were solving those and addressing those pain points. One, our guests are probably, with the exception of me and a few of the LPs we've had on, are mostly first-time fund managers. And we ask pointed questions about, like, how do you form your fund? What does your data room look like? What did your first pitches to LPs look like? So that we can begin to have more information sharing simply on the tactics. Two, we wanted to leverage Carta's brand to support the growing brands of first-time funds. And a podcast as a new media channel for Carta enabled us to do that. And three, on the track record, that's really where audience growth is so important in a podcast. We wanted more people to listen to the incredible investors that we interview on the podcast so they began to understand what this new generation of venture capital investors is capable of.
So what are some of the reflections you had from hosting this podcast for the past 3 years? Or three seasons.
Yeah. I mean, I just laid out like an entire hypothesis, right? Like that was, I mean, how does that sound to you? You spend a lot of time in this space. Like I can imagine other things we might do, but.
Was there something that like a major lesson that you learned as a result of starting this podcast that you weren't necessarily super bought into, or a hypothesis that you've held but you haven't really validated?
Some of the early hypotheses we had were validated relatively quickly. Like, is it valuable for, on the brand side, for an emerging fund manager to be on this podcast? And is it valuable for their brand growth? We pretty quickly validated that because we were hearing from our guests that they were getting more inbound, that this was an asset that they leveraged to help people meet them. So, okay, yes, the brand component is valuable. I would say the tactical piece, like, is listening to a podcast about how to form a fund helpful? I think we've seen some validation. And in fact, I shared with you this week, there was a tweet from a first-time fund manager who said they binged every episode of this podcast. Like, that's a good validation. I think what I didn't expect was how important this community of first-time fund managers is to each other. Like, first-time fund managers do seek each other out, and it wasn't clear to me what role we would play in actually being part of the community and being a valuable part of it if we were to be. And one way to measure, like, are we part of the community is audience growth. And that's what's taken a longer time to build. So I think we're starting to see the audience grow at a much higher rate than we have in the past. But to me, my takeaway from are we growing a community and are we part of this community is actually taking more of a venture capitalist mindset, which is a long-term view. You know, I was kind of expecting returns right away. Like, oh, shouldn't our audience be like spiking and growing exponentially? And it's like, yes, it will, but you need to build like piece by piece. So this is the third season of the podcast. We're now seeing the audience grow. And I think that that long-termism is really necessary when you are building any community, but certainly with this podcast specifically, I think it's important that we keep investing because we had to start somewhere, you know?
You're someone that I've always valued their opinion and learned a ton from the short time we've worked together. And I know you're slowly, probably not surely, leaving the VC world for your next career move. But before we dive into that, what does the future of VC for emerging managers look like, in your opinion?
So what I think we've been witnessing at Carta and in the past few years is the further fragmentation of the actors in venture capital. And what do I mean by that? I mean, there are more on the VC side, we're seeing so many more new small funds being formed. And that's partly enabled by the fact that the tactics of forming a venture capital fund are becoming better known and more productized. And we live that every day at Carta. So you have many more people becoming VCs. If you've been on Twitter in the past 2 years, you know that. And the other part is there are many new LPs coming into the venture asset class. So one of the big trends in venture capital has been the rise of the solo GP, an individual investor who aggregates, you know, anywhere from 1 million or less, or, you know, 5 million, 10 million. They're often running, you know, micro funds. They could run a bigger fund, maybe averaging around 25 million. Their investors are probably a lot of new LPs who haven't been in venture before. So that, I think, is a really interesting trend, because if you think of the venture capital of, I don't know, the 2010s, you had, first of all, we were coming out of the global financial crisis, but you had mostly large institutions, family offices, and probably a handful of high net worth individuals investing in established funds or funds run by established investors. Now, I think that that's totally shifting. You still definitely have those big players at the top, the institutions, the multifamily office, the single family office, but you just have this proliferation. So what will result from the fragmentation of what I would call like the leading edge of the venture capital world? I think we're seeing a lot more experimentation, particularly in like niche funds. You know, you have funds that are super focused on a particular element of this world. I think of Supply Chain Capital, run by Nora May Cadena and Shayna Harris. They are very focused on investing in the future of our food supply chain. And we can have funds like theirs now because of all of the innovation that we're seeing just broadly across the economy, and the, I think, recognition, and this is a blanket statement, across all sectors of the economy that innovation needs to occur for greater value to be unlocked. So yeah, I would say that's the biggest thing is just this, the nicheification of venture capital and many individual actors kind of living out and investing in what they see as the future versus a few powerful funds making those decisions.
I give you a magic wand to fix one thing about VC. What would it be?
Oh, good question. I think my magic wand would be focused on the pain point around fundraising for both the GP and the LP. I've had a vision, I haven't acted on it, but for some kind of, and others are thinking about this too, but a diagnostic for a GP and an LP that they could maybe use in a meeting to understand if they have GP-LP fit and to really quickly get to that conclusion. I think that you could do this diagnostic in a number of ways. It could be fun and playful where you could, I don't know, input a bunch of data and then you could have the results surface like right in the meeting. That might be a little much for where we are today in terms of integrating technology into pitch meetings. But I do think that there's so much time that is spent on both sides doing diligence when there may not be an ultimate fit. And that is, of course, what the diligence process is about. But I would love to save time on both sides. And that's the problem that I would fix.
Cool. We fixed VC.
Done.
We fixed emerging man. Done. We talked about how you ended up at VC, how you ended up at Carta, your views on venture capital. Let's talk a little bit about you and what's next. So you're going to leave the VC world. Like I said, I'm not fully convinced just yet, but you've done it. You are now the COO of Poppy Flowers. What are you most looking forward to?
Yeah, well, while I have made transitions in my career, you know, going from policy and politics to startups, startups to VC, I really look at, from the time I started at that SaaS company in 2013 through now, as a many different vantage points of the startup and venture ecosystem. And with my next step to Poppy Flowers, which is a seed stage floral e-commerce company, I see that as a continuation of staying in this startup venture-backed world. But with that said, I'm most excited about, I think one, working on a different problem is really interesting. I'm so grateful that I have been able to explore the many challenges that I think are present in the venture ecosystem and to work on those in different ways. And at Poppy, as a venture-backed company, I think in a way we get to explore some of the problems in the venture ecosystem. One is, I'm super proud we have a woman CEO, Cameron Hardesty, who founded the company in 2019. And I am really excited to dig into some of the big challenges that we're taking on in flowers. So Poppy was started really in 2019, born of the insight that, like venture capital, accessing beautiful, affordable flowers is very challenging. And it's challenging on both sides of the transaction. So accessing beautiful flowers for big days like weddings or events, or even every day, can be hard if you have never bought flowers before, especially for those big purchases. And there's a lot of education that maybe needs to occur for a customer, maybe not, but there's a big education gap and a big accessibility gap. Like flowers, you know, if you're buying flowers for your wedding, you can often get a really hefty price quote. And so you may feel like you're locked out of buying beautiful flowers. On the other side of the transaction, floral designers struggle with profitability. So they, especially for weddings and large events, they need to charge for their labor, you know, sourcing materials, et cetera. And so often you have a new buyer who wants to buy wedding flowers for the first time, who's not sure what to pay, who doesn't know much about flowers. And then they get this $7,000 quote and they're thinking, huh, I don't know if I want to pay that or if I can afford that. Whereas the floral designer is thinking, this is the minimum I have to charge for the type of work you want me to do. So we saw this disconnect, and Poppy is really, I would say, bridging that gap and creating an affordable, accessible wedding flower experience by providing both the flowers, and we have an incredible network of floral designers we work with. So what I'm excited about is thinking about this problem and still focusing on this issue of accessibility, whether it's venture capital or flowers. I think lowering the barrier to entry for people to be their creative selves is something that really inspires me. So whether it's making it easier to launch a venture fund or making it easier to design flowers for your wedding day, those are the kind of problems that really just keep me up at night and get me going.
Besides that, has there been other overlaps that you've seen between your different roles in VC and what you're doing today?
Oh my gosh, so many. I mean, I think that one thing that stands out is about both is both flowers and venture capital are very relationship driven, and the process of getting into either flowers or venture capital, there's high barriers to entry, particularly if you want to be a floral designer. So let's say the floral designer and the venture capital investor are kind of like analogous types in this scenario. So if you want to start a flower shop or be a floral designer, you're kind of weaving your way through a mix of, you know, mentors in the industry, what you can find online, and paying your way through a type of like self-directed flower school. And eventually you learn and maybe you own your own floral design shop or you're a retail florist. I think that the same question we asked around like, what are the tactics of starting a venture fund? Those lessons apply here. The second thing is that the floral industry is largely a services industry. And we often see that in the venture capital side of things too, like all of the service providers around venture, they've been operating for many decades with the same processes. We see that both in venture and in flower. So I get excited about thinking about how do you leverage technology to add a layer that creates efficiency and value for the actors in the system. Yeah, those are some of my initial thoughts, but come back to me in a few months. I'm sure I'll have more.
Well, I'm sure we will. Jessica, thank you so much for your time. This was great.
Thank you, Saif. I'm so excited to be a guest on The First Close. I look forward to tuning in to the show.
Jessica has had almost every job in or around VC. Her passion and belief in emerging managers is one of the many reasons I enjoyed the few months we worked together. Before she left Carta, I asked Jessica why she started The First Close. She wanted the podcast to be a practical toolkit that provides more access for people who don't have the traditional relationships within VC. She also wanted it to become the platform amplifying the voices of the new faces in venture capital. The First Close isn't going anywhere. I will be your new host for season 4, and will do my very best to stay true to Jessica's vision. We'll change things up a bit, though. See you next season.
This podcast is presented by eShares Incorporated, doing business as Carta Incorporated, Carta, and Carta Ventures. The opinions of the guests and host are their own and do not reflect the view of eShares Incorporated, doing business as Carta Incorporated, Carta, and Carta Ventures. Listeners should not treat any opinion or comments as investment, financial, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The content of the podcast is not legal, financial, or tax advice, and is not meant to recommend or offer the purchase or sale of a security. This podcast is informational only. The First Close is a HitStart Media production. The show is written and co-produced by me, Jessica Strauss. HitStart Media founder Theo Miller is creative director, with sound production by Nick Canepa and script production by Mary Kelleher. This podcast is presented by eShares, Inc., doing business as Carta, Inc., Carta, and Carta Ventures.